Welcome to Australian Hunger, I'm your host Ben. Today I've got an interview with Sydney death metal band Horizonous. Their latest album, A Culinary Cacophony, released back in January. Before that, it's Good Friday. I want to talk a little bit about Christianity and heavy metal. So two major events have happened over the last couple of weeks. In the last few days, two concerts, I believe, have been cancelled in Malaysia, apparently under pressure from religious authorities in the country. Obviously I can understand why those particular religious people are annoyed. They view the weekend as holy, and, you know, these bands, I think, often the lyrical content stand in opposition to it. But the fact is that it's just fundamentally freedom of expression. The point is that your view on life, your view of the world, is not everyone else's. And if they're not hurting anyone in these circumstances, then I think it really is wrong to take a stand against it in this way. Defiles guitarist said on Facebook, "I'm quite disappointed that some people still have serious misunderstandings about metal music and metalheads in general. Some bands may be singing about Satan, but it has to be understood that metal music is a metaphor to stand for intentional aberration. Most metalheads are peaceful and open-minded individuals. Nobody has intentions of hurting anyone. Nothing more, nothing less. I truly hope people start to understand that." Which I think is the really key point, that even though this music in some circumstances may be violent, its lyrical content may be opposed to, you know, Christianity in particular, and I think in some circumstances can be a little bit too specific in its hatred. Damien Marston in the Besogum episode talked a little bit about this, about, you know, some bands' lyrical content featuring killing of Christians, and I think that may be taking it too far, but I'm certainly not going to go and protest a band which has those kind of lyrical themes. You know, all these things need to be sort of taken in their own context and what it actually means. But I think fundamentally, you know, people should let others be and let people go on with their lives. And this form of expression, to a large extent, is not violent. You know, the shows may have physical aggression, but beyond that, I think you'd struggle to cite many instances of heavy metal people, heavy metal musicians, you know, committing violence on a scale beyond that of the general population. Having said that, it kind of puts a dent in my argument, the fact that recently a man who was a heavy metal fan was arrested for burning several churches. The fact that there were several churches, who I think the majority of attendants are African-American, perhaps puts a slightly different ideological slant on that. I don't believe we've got any specific evidence or statements about his intentions. But I think it's something we always need to keep an eye out for, you know, to make sure that opposition, anti-authority, is not expressed in kind of those ways. And the fact that this is just one individual, you don't see a swath of church burnings going on relating to heavy metal fans or heavy metal musicians. I think this is probably an isolated incident, possibly related more to white supremacy than heavy metal, but obviously we'll have to see. So I think, you know, that has to something to be taken into account. But the fact that this is the one instance that I'm probably talking about in ages, I think really demonstrates my point. This is largely just music for the music. And, you know, it's blasphemy, but I think kind of a sort of just society is founded upon the ability of people to commit blasphemy in their own sort of spaces, you know, in their own sort of concert halls, to do things that may not be acceptable to governments or may not be acceptable to religions. And I think that's a really important point. So I chatted to Jon McLaughlin of Horizonous, a Sydney death metal band. Really, really cool chat, because I haven't chatted to as many kind of straight death metal bands. They play in a more traditional style, very sort of going back to bands like Autopsy, a bit of a doomy approach. The album is called A Culinary Cacophony. I played three tracks from the album: Kuru Worship, Flesh Presented for Orgasmic Torment, and Nourishment Through Excrement. This is Jon McLaughlin. Let's go back to the beginning. How did the band start?
I think it all kind of started if a few of us were in the band Backyard Mortuary a couple of years ago, and after we broke up, a few of the members, Bianca and Stu, ended up getting together on a new thing, and then after a little bit, they were after a vocalist, and I started doing vocals in the meantime, so I put my hand up, and then, yeah, here we are.
That was one of the really interesting things that stuck out to me. Yeah, I'm a drummer in numerous projects, including a few involving Stu and Dan, who are also in the band. A few others. But vocalist for this particular band. Talk a little bit about how you sort of moved into that space.
So I was playing in a more sort of like grind band called The Holiday Project that was started with a few guys I went to school with. And we just didn't really have a vocalist, so I just started doing some random screams in that. I mean, the songs were generally 15, 20 seconds long anyway, so I thought it couldn't really hurt. So we were doing that for a bit, and then, from there, our songs started to get a little bit more sort of more into the, I guess, kind of sludge sort of area. So obviously that ends up with your songs going from 20 minutes up to 20 seconds, sorry, up to about 10 minutes. So the vocals just sort of took a bit more sort of getting used to from there. And then, yeah, that was kind of it. I just sort of accidentally ended up from there. Just we didn't know anyone else. And then here I am.
Where'd the name for the band come from?
It basically means sounds very bad, which not that I think the music itself is bad, but it is sort of like from the get-go, we wanted the music to be disgusting and gross. And sort of when someone came across the word horizonous, just I think it was just purely by accident, really. It just sort of fit the bill and we all agreed.
In general, what is the appeal of this kind of more old school style of death metal that you play?
I guess, well, for me anyway, as far as death metal goes, the older stuff I just feel is the best. Not that I'm against newer stuff, but I mean, you can't beat the classics, your Deicide, Morbid Angel and things like that. And so to me, I feel that it's a bit more, to go back to the last question, it's sort of a bit more dirty, disgusting sort of sounding than a lot of what you hear these days. I think that's probably the main thing. And then I think songwriting is a big part of it as well. Whereas like even like, your bands like Deicide was fucking extreme, but they were actually well-written songs. Whereas now it just sort of seems, let's go 1,000 miles per hour from the get-go, or let's just chuck random silly breakdowns here and there for no apparent reason. I think those two, the songwriting and just that gross, fucking filthy, violent, disgusting music that I feel that a lot of newer bands don't quite get that.
In terms of you guys playing live, I want to get to that first before I talk about the album. You played live at the Tote twice over the weekend. How did that come about and how was it?
It was pretty good. So that came about, I think it was someone from the band Defenestration got in touch. Apologies if that wasn't actually the case. As far as I know, it was someone in the band. Just basically somehow came across us, asked us if we wanted to go down. We hadn't been down to Melbourne yet, so seemed like as good a chance as any to play with those guys. So we did, both nights with them. It was just, going to whether you go anywhere, Melbourne, Sydney, Canberra, whatever, it's kind of good to do a couple of shows while you're there. Like, I mean, it's just sort of nice to play in somewhere different. So as far as them both being at the Tote, I mean, whatever, a gig's a gig. That wasn't really a huge deal. But, both nights had great fucking bands. There was a band called Dead Root on the first night. They were killer. Vile Apparition were excellent on the Saturday night. So, it was a really cool weekend, and I think it went down pretty well.
No, that's really, really good. So you, for the most part, would be behind the sort of the back of the stage playing the drums. How does it feel to be up the front performing vocals?
I'm kind of used to it now. When I first started, it was a bit of a like something to get used to. I guess not really knowing what to do, because normally I've got a drum kit to hide behind. I've been doing it a couple of years now. We've played plenty of shows, and I feel like I'm at a stage now where I've kind of just figured out what I do, and it's not really a thing anymore. I just kind of get out there And then before I know it, the show's done.
Mm-hmm. Something I like to ask a lot of people when I'm talking about their live shows is, like, there's something you'd want to do, like, approach to a live show, which you'd be aiming for to make it a good show. What is that for you?
So as far as a good show, I think with what we're doing at the moment, I mean, it's really just to get out there, and I mean, it sounds cliche, but to just play the songs as fun, heavy and brutal as you can, and hope that it translates well and people are into it. What I'd like to do, as I mean, our latest album's been a lot about food and what have you. I'd like to get some sort of food theme going, whether it's I don't know, raw meat or something hanging all over the stage. I'd like that, but I think that's the thing that's missing from a lot of bands these days is the whole making a show out of it, as opposed to like everybody's seen a fucking band play, and it's just great to see five guys up there. But if you can have something more to just make it a little bit more interesting, even if it is just some, even just a change of the lighting to what's normal, I mean, that is something that can make it better. But for the time being, it's basically just to get out there, play our best songs the best way we can, just make sure it's heavy as fuck, and that, yeah, people love it.
A band and a feast.
Yes, correct.
Just before we move on to the album, do you have any upcoming shows?
Not for a little bit. I know that there is something we're doing in Sydney in August. Off the top of my head, I can't remember the date. It's hasn't been announced yet, so I probably shouldn't say much, but there is something happening in August we'll be playing at. That's about it for the moment, but I mean, that is a couple of months away, so I'm sure there will be something in the meantime.
Cool. So let's talk about the album. By way of getting there, let's talk first about the EP. You released it in 2016. Talk a little bit about, I don't know, like you guys are kind of, you've done a few albums, actually, at that stage. Anyway, let me start that again.
You're right.
So you released an EP back in 2016. Talk a little bit about it.
So that was the Plague Doctors EP. So, yeah, first thing we did. So that was, that was the original lineup, which is similar to what we've got now. Different source, we had Hannah on drums, who has, in the meantime, moved over to Canada. So hello to her if she hears this. Aside from that, same lineup as we've got now. That was just basically born out of those initial sort of getting together of, Stu, Bianca, Dan and Hannah had been jamming on stuff for quite a while, and then I sort of came into the picture when they already had a couple of songs done. It was just more a thing of, we had a few songs, we were all pretty happy with them. We decided we should get something out, but just didn't want to waste another sort of 6 or 12 months working on another batch of songs to fill it out to an album. They all sort of worked well. So, and from there it was just basically putting it together. The whole Plague Doctors thing, that just came about as, for me personally, I find it easier if I can sort of, not a full-blown concept album, but some sort of underlying story in the lyrics on any sort of release that sort of makes it sort of a good way you can link everything together. So I just sort of came up with the idea that the whole thing would be about these maniacal doctors who've come back to Earth to make this super strain of a bubonic plague and basically wipe out existence. So that kind of just took over the whole theme of lyrically what was going on there, and then just the gross fucking disgusting death metal underneath just fit it really well. So I'm really happy with how it came out. We still play some of those songs now and they still fucking sound great, so as far as I know, we did pretty well.
definitely. When do you start working on your full length?
It was kind of about the same time. So when we decided to do the recording, we just set aside a bit of time for that, and then in the meantime, Stu and Dan, they write majority of the stuff. They'd had some riffs and songs that they'd shared around. So, it was probably around about the same time we were recording Plague Doctors, maybe a little bit after was the kind of the early stuff anyway. And, we're just the sort of band that we don't really set aside specific writing time or gigging time or anything like that. We just kind of do what feels right at any given moment. And, it just all kind of went from there. So it was kind of, there wasn't a break in there.
bunch of bands. You guys have been a band before. Releasing the EP, do you kind of, do you take any learnings away from that, working on the Culinary Cacophony?
Yeah, a little bit. I think just as far as, like, sonically getting it to sound better, I think that's always that should be a given with any band. I mean, like, you don't want to release something one day and then release something that sounds like shit after it. If it's the other way around, it kind of makes sense. But yeah, so if anything, it was just the sort of thing of the Plague Doctors was almost like the DNA of the band, I guess, for lack of a better term, of like, this is the idea of what we want to achieve. And so with Culinary, it was more or less a case of saying, all right, it has to be better than that. The songs have to be better. The production has to be better. It just all around has to be better. Otherwise, it's just really not worth doing. And yeah, so I think sonically, you can listen to them back to back, and yeah, there might be some similarities. It's the same people playing on the two things, but I think from a just sound wise, the album sounds way better. It's way heavier. It's just way more in your face. And yeah, it's really cool.
So how do you, like, obviously, you mentioned the other guys write most of the songs. How have they kind of come to fruition in the band?
For the most part, as I said, Stan and Jude write, pretty much all of it, really, for the most part, aside from little bits here and there. But yeah, it is a lot of the time a case of, one of them will come up with, either some riffs or a full track and just sort of send it around to the rest of us. And then that just kind of gives us a backbone of like what to work with from there. So whether or not the structure gets some changes or we change some of the riffs around and things like that. But for the most part, it is just kind of those two writing on their own. And yeah, it pretty much works every time.
And what about your vocals? How do you kind of fit those into the mix?
Once everyone kind of knows the music side of things, I kind of just wait until then and then just pretty much just scream nothing along to what they're doing, just to get the sort of hang of some patterns that will work for the music and just to kind of work that way. I mean, like, as I said, with the EP, and I did it with the album as well, there is a sort of underlying theme lyrically, so I don't sort of get started on that before I've figured out what that idea is. So early on, it's just basically us in a rehearsal room. I'm screaming nothing, really. And then just over time, once I sort of get that idea of what I'm writing about, I just fit the words to that. And then it actually comes together quite easily, as opposed to going in with some pre-existing idea of what you have to try and fit in. I think that's a lot harder and doesn't always work.
How'd you go about sort of figuring out that underlying ideas that's going to inspire the album?
I hate to say it, it's usually by accident. usually a thing of, actually, you know what, it usually comes from when we do start playing the songs, and I'm just figuring out some patterns and what have you. I'll just get a few random ideas, and really from there, so it might be just sort of I'll accidentally say a particular sort of phrasing of words, and then I'll sort of remember that. I think that's actually pretty fucking cool. What can I do from that? And so, it is really by accident of just seeing what comes out when we are rehearsing and then thinking, all right, that's a cool idea. That's a cool idea. And that's a really cool idea. Is it worth trying to chuck them together? Can I make something from that? And from there, it actually is quite easy. It just really comes together once you've sort of got that idea of, all right, we're going to sing about a massive plague that wipes out humanity, or we're going to sing about eating people. Once you've got that generic idea there, it becomes a lot easier to just figure out the rest and sort of put the rest of the lyrics together.
I sort of struggle to listen to lyrics at the best of times, but I'm always fascinated by them. What approach does humor play in your lyrics?
A little bit. I don't think that we're a funny band. We're not, say, for like, lack of a better example, we're not like Blood Duster, for example, where it is quite, I mean, musically it is quite serious, but there is some pretty silly stuff going on lyrically. To me, I take a lot of what I do more from like the Peter Steele Carnivore Type O Negative type of thing, where it's sort of a lot of dark humor in a way, I guess, and not trying to be too silly and slapstick. It's sort of, there is an underlying a bit of funniness there, more in like a satirical way than anything. But I guess at the end of the day, that just sort of came about of like, yeah, I love Typo Negative and those and yeah, everything that Peter Steele ever did. And also just to kind of entertain myself of thinking, well, bands usually just sing about the most gory, disgusting, violent things out there. That's all well and good. It's been done to death. How can I do that in a way that's going to give me a bit of a laugh at the same time, but also not cheapen the whole thing by being just, I don't know, silly and crass, I guess.
One thing I was thinking about was, so I had an interview with a podcast on Saturday, and we were talking about kind of controversy within heavy metal, because that's something they've touched on in their podcast. And one of the guys actually brought up an interesting point where he sort of finds the whole death metal obsession with violence and gore weird. Like, he he's not a fan of horror movies. He doesn't listen to death metal. And so that kind of, I know, that sort of was like, that's not really how I think about it, because I'm a fan of both of those things. I was wondering about your thoughts of, like, you know, it's kind of from an outside perspective, seems a bit strange singing about, you know, death and violence and murder and that sort of stuff.
You know what? I feel like it's one of those things where it's like some people get it, some people don't, and I think that's as kind of simple as it is. And especially these days, it's like extreme metal, like extreme metal is as accessible as pop music these days. So it's sort of like your average Joe Blow that wouldn't have been exposed to this stuff unless they actually made an effort to go and look for it, would never have heard this sort of stuff. Whereas nowadays, everyone comes across it, and the people that don't like it seem to feel like they need to tell the world about it, which, whatever, they have, that's their right to do that. But at the same time, I just think if you don't get it, you don't get it. It's fine. It's not a big deal. You just need to think, okay, I gave the whole death metal thing a go. It's not for me. Move on, find something else. And I think that's a very strange thing that it nowadays seems to be important that everyone's opinion on it, on everything is heard, when at the end of the day, it's really not that interesting and people don't care.
Now, Peter Donahue, who you played with in Illimitable Dollar for a few years, he mastered this album. Talk a little bit about how it affects the process when you know the person who's working on it.
It's kind of good in a way of like the thing of it's quite flexible. And I mean, having Pete in the band, it was a thing of, he from the get-go, he put up his hand and we already knew that he knew what he was doing when it came to mastering, so that wasn't really a big deal. And I guess it is just that sort of flexibility of you can work on your own time. You don't have to book in a specific session and all of that sort of stuff. You can just kind of send it on and say, all right, as long as it's done by this date, take your time, do what you need to do. So it is very nice in that way. I guess on the flip side of that, if you did need something in a hurry, it's probably not the best way to do it. But yeah, we're happy with how it all came out.
Now, why'd you pick the title a Culinary Cacophony?
So that was as I was saying earlier, the whole thing, predominantly the whole album is about human beings being eaten, so something about food sort of made sense to me in the title. And then I guess it's also a little bit of a sly tribute to Carcass. They had the Carnious Cacophony, so we've just taken that and just turned it into Culinary Cacophony, made it our own little spin on that. Hopefully they don't care, but I fucking love Carcass, so yeah, if anything, it's a good thing in my eyes.
I mean, if referencing other bands or other albums wasn't allowed, there would be no heavy metal, let's be honest.
Exactly. Everybody does it. Everybody's been doing it for years. I mean, we have a song on the album called Number of the Feast as well. It doesn't take a genius to figure out where that one's come from. So, yeah, again, it's kind of that sort of little bit of humor. It's sort of it makes me laugh. It makes the others in the band laugh. It's not meant to be overly slapstick or anything, but, yeah, it fits the bill.
A Number of the Feast was the longest track on the album. Talk a little bit about how that one in particular came about.
It's actually pretty much two songs fused together into one. So it started off, the song itself is only about 5 minutes long, but then Stu came up with an outro sort of piece that worked quite well, so we just tacked that on. So that's what really bumped it out. So it's, I mean, you can compare it to some albums when there's the track called outro. We've just chosen to just stick it on the end of the song as opposed to give it its own little track. But yeah, it's sort of a good way to end the album off. Gets me to shut up for a couple of minutes, which I'm sure some people enjoy. So yeah.
I'm not afraid of the dark.
So Rod Scott did the artwork. Why'd you go with him? I think again, if I'm not mistaken. And what was his brief for the artwork?
Yeah. So he's done both of our album art, so for Plague Doctors and for Culinary Cacophony as well. So he's been a friend of Stu's actually for years, and he lives down in Adelaide at the moment. He's a tattoo artist, I believe. So if you like the artwork, track him down. He can probably do some cool stuff on your arm. But yeah, with this one, it was more a case of lyrically, sort of once I'd put all the sort of ideas together that were being sort of screamed about in all the songs, it was kind of, we started off with what the album was going to be called, and sort of having something about being eaten on the front, and then that tied into the first song, Kuru Worship, which is about sort of eating the brain. It's a disease that you can get from eating human brains. So that was kind of the inspiration for the cover. And then throughout the booklet, there's a lot of other sort of artwork that goes along with it, which again is just various ways in which human beings are being cooked. Like, I mean, we've got one in there, which is like usually you see a pig on a nice platter with an apple in its mouth. On this one, you've got a man there with an apple in his mouth. We've also got one that goes along with the song Nourishment Through Excrement, where it's basically a human being held up and forced to just incessantly shit into a vat. So lovely stuff, but basically it all just kind of came from ideas that went with the lyrics and sort of went along with that theme of sort of eating people, I guess. And I'm over the moon as to how it came up. Like, it came out sort of, all the artwork just matches everything perfectly, and it's fucking disgusting and it's amazing. So yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's made a little bit more creepy, the fact that it's sort of an inhuman, like, spider-type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which feeds into, sort of, I think, some people's sort of primordial fears.
Yeah. Like, I didn't want to make it about sort of pure cannibalism. Like, I think, yeah, that's something cool if you wanted to sort of go down that road. But I think, again, it's been done. And you can't... I guess you can't go too extreme with that. There are limitations of what human beings are capable of, and even though they can do the worst things imaginable, some sort of unhuman creature that has the ability to do wide-scale human being feasts is just that little bit more extreme. So I kind of thought, yeah, once I had that idea, I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I can go to town with this and just, yeah, annihilate swaths of people at a time. And I think that was what sort of took it to that next level of just not being about a band like Macabre, for example, who sing about sort of serial killers, and yeah, that's all well and good, but it's like, this is wide-scale mass murder. Not that that's a great thing, but in the context of death metal, it works. So
So something that you've mentioned specifically as part of the music, something that's very, I think, become very implicit as part of the lyrics, is disgust.
Yes.
Expand a little bit more about why that's kind of been important in the way this band has kind of eventuated.
I think short answer to that one is it's just, it needs to be extreme. I feel like a lot of what is called extreme music these days isn't that extreme. And so I think the more you can push the boundaries without being, there's those deathcore bands that sing about, like, violence against women. I think that's a fucking cop-out, and that's disgusting on a whole nother level, which is, that's a whole different conversation I don't really want to get into. But as far as sort of what is considered death metal these days, it's all kind of a bit occult and dark, and it's getting into that more black metal territory, which, again, it works. There's bands that do it quite well, but I think it's lost a lot of that old school, Carcass, Autopsy, bands like that, where it was just about trying to out-disgust everyone. I think that's missing these days. And so when I had the chance to sing in a band like that, I was like, well, that's what I want to do. So yeah, that's really the only reason why it's ended up that way. It's just kind of trying to get that old feeling back of pulling people apart and doing disgusting things to people. And yeah, I don't know. It's really good stuff to write about, and you can be creative with it.
I want to ask you a couple of more sort of general personal questions. Talk a little bit about the other bands that you're involved in.
All right. that could be a whole sort of other, I guess, interview on its own. So I guess I'll pick the main ones for the moment. So probably like I guess the most obvious one is Illimitable Dollar, which I also did with Stu and Dan from Horizonus. So I play drums in that one. That's more of a funeral doom kind of band, like those familiar with Skepticism. I think that's probably the closest reference point. Like we've got the gigantic organ sound that they used to have. So we've been doing that for a couple of years as well. That came out of the Slow Death, which I'd been doing with those guys as well, which was unfortunate circumstances. Our vocalist in the Slow Death, Greg, he passed away, and so Illimitable was kind of the album that, or the, not the album, the band that we did sort of post him. So yeah, that's been going pretty well. Aside from that, I've also been playing in a band called Burden Man recently, which is sort of, again, more on the doom side of the spectrum. That's kind of a little bit more folky doom, I guess. I kind of describe it as if Nick Cave or Lennon Cohen were playing in a doom band, and they just happened to have the guys from Mayhem as their backing band. There's a little bit of black metal going in there. So yeah, that one's pretty cool. We've got a EP coming out over the next few months, so that one's doing a few things. And probably another one that's worth mentioning is I've recently rejoined Temple Nightside on drums, which I'd left a few years ago, but I've rejoined that, and so we've got a show coming up towards the end of the year over in the States, the Never Surrender Festival, and we've got a new album in the works as well. So yeah, across those three bands plus Horizonus, that's keeping me pretty busy at the moment.
One thing that sort of interests me, being a non-drummer, is drums in doom metal bands, particularly bands like funeral doom bands, which are really slow. Like, talk a little bit about, I don't know, how that kind of fits into like playing metal, which I think most people think of as playing fast, playing aggressively, all that sort of things.
I think at the bare bones, metal just in general, it all comes from rock and roll, which you just really take the bones of AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Black Sabbath, all your standard bands that you'd sort of mention in these sorts of conversation, and then metal is just that taken in every other extreme direction, whether it's fast or slow. So, I mean, from that, bands just started getting faster. You had Motorhead, next thing you had Napalm Death, and then there you go, you've got your blast beat and extreme, like, death metal, black metal, that just kind of writes itself from there. And then on the other end, you had Black Sabbath and then Trouble and Cathedral and blah, blah, blah. And then bands just started getting slower. So it all kind of comes from the same place. And so when I initially learned drums, I was taught from a sort of rock and roll perspective, learning stuff from the Beatles, AC/DC, Black Sabbath. And I think if you actually take the time to, like, drumming wise anyway, your 70s kind of bands, I mean, John Bonham is probably as big of an influence on me as someone like Mike Smith or fucking, I don't know, Gene Hoglund, for example, whereas I spent a hell of a lot of time learning how to play Led Zeppelin songs properly and just the nuances in his playing. And so when it came to playing doom metal, that was really the time when I could explore that and actually play that sort of stuff, which I actually really enjoy, because I mean, in a black metal band, when you're playing a blast beat for 90% of the time, you don't have as much of a chance to be creative. So I mean, it's really good for me, I think. I think that's why I've ended up in bands of both styles. Of I love playing the fast aggressive stuff. That's an incredible thing to do. But then if I was doing that all the time, I'd get bored. I have that creative side that I want to do. And so playing the slower funeral doom stuff, I like to think that my drumming in that is a little bit more interesting than some bands where it is just quite straight ahead and what have you. I think in the background there, drumming wise, there is a lot going on. So it's more or less just been a thing of, I like playing lots of different things, and I wouldn't want to play one style of metal, especially all the time.
Mm-hmm. When did you pick up the drums, and why did you stick with them?
It was when, how old was I? I was 11, So prior to that, I'd played violin for a number of years and then moved on from that to guitar, which I didn't really enjoy at all. And then went on to drums from there. So yeah, that was almost 20 years ago now. And I think why I stuck with it was just more, I enjoyed it. I figured like, yeah, whatever I was doing, I enjoyed doing it. And obviously once I started playing in bands, other people enjoyed what I was doing. I wasn't sort of being kicked out of bands left, right, and center, and what have you. So it was just, yeah, really just a natural thing. And I got to a stage where I was really comfortable doing it. And next thing you know, I'm playing in this band and that band, and it's just kind of spiraled from there. So I guess it was just one of those things. I was meant to do it. By whose hand that was, I don't know. But yeah, here I am 20 years later, and I'm still enjoying it. I'm not planning on giving it up anytime soon. So yeah, I think there's plenty more things to come drumming wise from me.
Now, in the credits for the album, you mentioned Mental Funeral, Horrified, and Symphonies of Sickness. Why did
Yes.
you mention those albums?
Pretty much just because they're the greatest fucking albums ever. Like, really, it's just a short answer. That's really lyrically, vocally, like, I mean, I don't sound exactly like the guys on those albums, but that's pretty much where my top inspiration for what I do in Horizonous came from. So, I mean, you've got Chris Reifert doing the drums and vocals thing. I have done that on occasion in Horizonous when we have had drummer problems. But yeah, aside from that, I love those bands. I love those albums. They are the sorts of things I can listen to that day in, day out. They never get old. And I just strive to do something as good as those ones.
Final question. What have you been listening to, watching, or reading recently?
All right, what have we got? So reading, I guess I've actually just this last week, and I picked up the biography of Al Jorgensen from Ministry. I'm a few chapters into that, and that's pretty insane so far. So they're like another band that, I mean, even before I really knew what metal was, Ministry, I think I heard, yeah, probably when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and just thought, this is fucked. This is heavy and it's insane. I think prior to that, I'd maybe heard Nine Inch Nails, but that I thought Ministry was a whole other thing. And when you're a kid hearing that, that was just mental. So, I'm a couple of chapters deep in that, and already I'm kind of glad that I never really got into drugs as much as he did. But yeah, that's turning out to be a pretty good book. As far as what I've been listening to recently, I mean, all over the place. To be honest, I haven't really been keeping up to date with what's going on these days. I did hear Earth put a new song out recently. I thought that was really cool. Not that they're really sort of anything remotely related to metal anymore, but I think they're still a really cool band. I mean, aside from that, it's really just a lot of the normals, like Neurosis, Abzu, Today Is the Day, Yob. They're always a favorite, I think, as far as newer doom goes. I think nothing really beats Yob. Cathedral's always another one that I'm always listening to. Watching, I haven't really been watching much. I watched that Motley Crue movie on the weekend. That was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. Saw Lords of Chaos. Didn't really enjoy that. Aside from that, a lot of just watching. I just love Peep Show. That's a show that just never gets old. So that's always an easy go-to. But I don't know. I don't know. Not a whole lot of new stuff really is the main thing. I sort of It sounds bad, but I haven't really been keeping up with it.
We'll be right back. was Nourishment through Excrement. Before that, I played Flesh Presented for Orgasmic Torment. And the first track was Kuru Worship, all from Horizonus's A Culinary Cacophony. Thanks to Jon for talking to me. Before I leave you, I don't want to give you a recommendation as much as talk a little bit about some of the music I've been listening to this week. For reasons beyond which I can explain, I've been listening to Smash Mouth's music. I listen to all of their albums, their classic 1996. I can actually reel off quite a bit of this information now because I've been researching it. I'm actually researching it for a weird episode for the other podcast that I do, the Eclecticast. I feel like Smash Mouth is a nostalgic band for a lot of us, but a band we don't really understand. It sort of comes out as a really key point for us. 1999, they released their album Astro Lounge, which features their classic hit All Star. That song is then featured on Shrek, and it sort of embeds in our mind us of a certain generation, a certain age. And yeah, it's people say, like, oh, you should go experience things you don't like. And I don't necessarily agree with that, because if you don't like it, what's the point? I don't know if there's any value in just trying to broaden your horizons for their own sake. You should listen to interesting music that you may not like, but you shouldn't listen to bad music that you don't like. I don't feel that there's any purpose in that, even if it's bad just by your sort of subjective standard. But I listened to all their albums. It was a fucking punish. And yeah, it's at a certain point, it's like, can I objectively say these are bad? Their 2012 album Magic, really, really lackluster, really sort of struggling to get there. But yeah, I think it is interesting, though, to listen to something bad, knowing it's bad, and not for the idea that, oh, I'll broaden my horizons, or, oh, it's a different experience, but no, the experience in itself of listening to bad music is a bizarre one, and I recommend it only just for the experience itself, not the idea that, you know, your musical ideas will somehow progress. No, I don't agree with that, listening to pop music. It is interesting just listening to a band which you, like, hate and is actually quite painful to listen to. But that's what I've been listening to this week, Smash Mouth. So people who I've sort of briefly mentioned it to have been surprised that the band's around. And they released 5 albums. They released a Christmas album, The Gift of Rock, in 2005. And I'm not looking at Wikipedia for this. I'm rattling this off the top of my head. In 2018, they released their acoustic album, acoustic version of their 1997 album, Fushu Mang. Yeah, I can rattle all this stuff off the top of my head. But regardless, Smash Mouth, they're interesting, sort of. The fact that they're still going makes it odd, but they're an interesting artifact of a previous age, really. Sort of an age which kind of feels a little bit nu metal, but it's not quite. But when you look at the band and when you hear their vocalist style, it does give you feelings of that, definitely. But yeah, I've been a bit lax. I've been a bit apathetic. I'll be totally honest. It can sometimes be hard to get up the muster to release a podcast, but I've got a few interviews which I'm hoping to get through in the sort of time I've got off over Easter and start presenting on a regular basis. I did an interview just before with legendary death metal band Possessed, their vocalist Jeff Becerra. So that was really exciting. Really, really exciting. So that's something to look forward to. But until then, thank you so much for joining me. I'll catch you next week. Enjoy your Easter.